Hello and welcome to The Stooshy, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. I'm David McDougall, your host this week, and joining the conversation, we've got my colleagues from the politics team, Adele Merson in Aberdeen, Callum Ross in Edinburgh, with producer Chris Finn slaving away over a hot mixer board to make it all sound like smooth jazz by the time he's done. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, there is only one story on the lips of anybody who follows Scottish politics this week, and that's the marathon 8-hour appearance of First Minister Nicola Sturgeon at a Holyrood inquiry into her government's handling of allegations of inappropriate behaviour by former First Minister Alex Salmond against a number of women. Mr. Salmond was, of course, cleared in a court case of any criminal wrongdoing, but the actions of the SNP government into how it investigated those complaints and how they treated Mr. Salmond along the way have been under the microscope. Last week we heard from Mr. Salmond himself. This week it was the turn of Nicola Sturgeon to appear before the committee. And Callum, if we can start with you, there were a number of key questions we were all waiting to see if the First Minister answered. Let's go through some of them. One of the most important ones is this central idea. Did she breach the ministerial code? That's a charge that the opposition have said. And that's sort of what's under scrutiny at the moment.
Yeah, that's right, David. And not just, you know, one breach, the opposition, MSPs, parties, some of them have suggested there have been kind of multiple breaches of the ministerial code. And, you know, it did kind of feel like the First Minister was fighting for her political future when she took her oath on Wednesday morning, given the build-up we'd had. You know, it'd been huge drama around Alex Salmond when, you know, would he give evidence, wouldn't he give evidence, the publication of that evidence, and then the intervention of the Crown Office. Then Mr. Salmond actually taking the stand, so to speak, and making a number of allegations, and then the Scottish government was forced to release its legal advice on the eve of Ms. Sturgeon's testimony. So it was quite a build up, and it would be fair to say the First Minister was under real pressure. She addressed the issues, and she was asked repeatedly over kind of 7-8 hours about these potential breaches of the ministerial code. I think there's sort of two or three key points that a number of the MSPs kept coming back to and kept questioning the First Minister on, and they kind of get to the heart of what you know, the alleged breaches of the code, I suppose, so to speak. The first one is the one we've heard a lot about, these meetings on March 29 and March and April 2nd, 2018. Obviously, Ms. Sturgeon said initially that it was the April 2nd meeting with Alex Salmond. That was when she found out about the allegations against him and the complaints process. But she's also kind of, after that, been forced to kind of admit that she there was another meeting a few days earlier, 4 days earlier, with Jeff Aberdeen, who's Alex Salmond's former chief of staff, which set up the subsequent meeting. And you know, she said that she was given a kind of general understanding of what the issue was during that meeting with Jeff Aberdeen. But, you know, questions remain over why did she forget that earlier meeting? Did she mislead Parliament over when she found out about the allegations? Why did she agree to meet Alex Salmond if she knew what it was about, even if she had a general understanding? And should she have done so?
I've got to ask Callum, though. I go to lots of meetings, and I don't remember what I said at a meeting yesterday. If you're the First Minister of Scotland, presumably you're going to many more meetings, and you're being asked a couple of years later, which meeting was it that this was brought up? On one hand, I can see, does it really matter that she remembered a meeting was this day or another day a few days later? But if you're being devil's advocate, you might argue, well, look, this was her political mentor, he was a former First Minister, he's being accused of some really shocking things, how would you forget? How did that slip your mind when something as huge as that comes up?
Well, I think that's the point. And, you know, Nicola Sturgeon is such a, you know, details person. She comes across as someone who's on top of these kind of things. And it's hard to imagine she would forget an earlier meeting. And I guess the point about this earlier meeting leads on to the other point, in that if she had actually known on March 29, not only had she, you know, misled Parliament potentially, having said she found out on April the 2nd, but then there, it raises the question of why she agreed to meet him. Because if she, I mean, I think the initial impression was she didn't know when she went into that April 2nd meeting why, you know, why she was meeting Alex Salmond. But if she did know on March 29, then there's the question of why she agreed to meet him, and you know, why wasn't it officially kind of recorded under you know, any kind of meeting the First Minister has in, to discuss government business would normally be recorded and has to be recorded, is my understanding, in terms of the ministerial code. So that's why those meetings are important. And, you know, she was asked kind of repeatedly about them. She kind of stuck to her previous story to a certain extent, although she did change the emphasis a bit. You know, she said even if she did know the details on March 29, she might still have, you know, not done anything differently in terms of going into the April 2nd meeting, because you know, Mr. Salmond was an old friend and her former mentor, and he...
How were they at this point? I mean, today, Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon clearly do not get along. Nicola Sturgeon described him as her former bestie. But back then, were things, like, much smoother between them? Were they, like, on good terms? So if he said, she gets a message, oh, Alex Salmond wants to pop in and see you at your home, that sounds like they were still quite friendly at this point.
I think they would have been. I think there had been a deterioration, nothing like what's happened since. But, you know, after Nicola Sturgeon became First Minister, succeeded Alex Salmond, I think, you know, there was it probably would have been more helpful to Nicola Sturgeon if Alex Salmond had kind of left politics you know, gone and the after dinner circuit or something like that, you know, got a job at a university, something like that. But instead, he stood for Parliament again in Gordon, became an MP. There were questions over his TV show on RT. And there's some comments he made at the Edinburgh Fringe event, I think I'm right in saying, which were accused of being sexist at the time. And, you know, I think he was making life slightly difficult for Nicola Sturgeon, or that's what her people around her would have thought. But, you know, they were still close. You know, there hadn't been any great falling out at that stage, is my understanding.
And now he's been saying that there was a conspiracy that... He doesn't say there was a conspiracy involving Nicola Sturgeon to put him in jail, but he thinks that there was, like, a high-level SNP, a cabal, plotting against him, which does sound like a plot of a TV show. Did we see any of that coming out of the testimony this week?
Not from Nicola Sturgeon. I mean, obviously, she moved to rebut that completely as absurd. You know, she said it wasn't based on any facts, and had the line that you know, all she did was refuse to follow the age-old pattern of allowing a powerful man to use his status and connections to get what he wants. So no, I mean, she dismissed that allegation. Part of that allegation was to do with the civil case involving Alex Salmond, the judicial review, and he had kind of suggested that the government was so scared, people around Nicola Sturgeon, government officials, SNP officials, became quite concerned that they were going to lose the judicial review involving Alex Salmond, and that this was going to have kind of catastrophic consequences for her reputation and for the government. And so they kind of continued with this case in the hopes that the criminal trial would kind of overtake it and overshadow it. I mean, that was one of the suggestions from Mr. Salmond. I understand there's been some legal advice released in the last day or so, which kind of cast doubt over that assertion, but I'm sure there'll be different views over whether that is the case or not.
Callum, thanks. Let me bring Adele in at this point. Look, I was struck by how calm Nicola Sturgeon was for 8 hours. If I'd been on the receiving end of questioning for a fraction of that time, I would have lost the plot. She was pretty solid, but I think this was a more emotionally charged performance that we've seen from the First Minister, a more human performance maybe than we're used to seeing. What did you make of it?
The First Minister was definitely, you know, it was those moments, I think, of rawness and emotion that probably would have, well, no, I'm almost certain, would have cut through more with the public than, you know, what we've just discussed there, which is important matters, but they're procedural, the ins and outs, what happened on what day. But to your everyday person, I think what would stand out to them are those moments of emotion. You know, she said that she felt so sad about, really sad about how things had kind of played out with a man that she'd cared about for a long time. She said she had looked up to and revered since probably about the age of 20 or even younger. And I think she really centered her testimony around the emotional side of things. I guess that was a wise or clever thing to do because it does cut through with the public and they do see, they maybe begin to question, as she said, you know, why would I have wanted, you know, this was somebody that was my ally, someone that I had such a long relationship with, what possible sort of, why would I have wanted this to come to light? Why would I have wanted this to play out that way? And I think she was convincing on that. But it would have been unusual for people, I think, to see the First Minister being so open. But I think it was probably a kind of wise route to go down, and it'll be remembered long after all these kind of procedural elements.
I think this was the contrast for me, was between Alex Salmond last week and Nicola Sturgeon this week. She very cleverly brought it back round to the whole Me Too movement. And she made it clear, even though Alex Salmond had been cleared in court, that he had apologized. He had told her he'd apologized to at least one of the women who had made some complaints against him. And she made it very clear that she had learned things about this man that she cared for, who was her friend, that really changed her perception of him as a person. And I think I was struck a lot by that. They were clearly very close. And now that relationship has completely changed forever.
She said that when she was talking about the date, the April 2nd date, she said that she claims that the prior date, 4 days earlier, she had just been given a sort of general indication, no specific details. And she said that the reason the April 2nd date stood out was because Alex Salmond handed her a letter from the Permanent Secretary Leslie Evans, which outlined some of the allegations. And, you know, she said, she would never forget that moment of reading that, as you say. And it came up, there was much said of the fact that Conservative MSP Murdo Fraser, you know, asked her, that was a particularly, I guess, where her voice actually sounded like it was close to breaking, when Murdo Fraser asked her, did she think she owed the Scottish people an apology for having previously told them that they should trust the former First Minister? And in that moment, she said, well, no, I trusted him, obviously, because she was so close to him for 30 years, and also made the point that, you know, she was not going to apologise for the behaviour of a man, really. And yeah, as you say, she said he was acquitted by a jury of criminal conduct and that is beyond question. But from what he had told her, that she felt his behaviour was not always appropriate. And as Callum said, she kind of uttered that standout line that she refused to follow the age-old pattern of letting a powerful man use his status and connections to get what he wants. And I think that was how she tried to frame her whole kind of testimony and argument, was I guess some would argue, beyond the remits in some ways of this inquiry, she made it about the wider debate, the wider Me Too debate, to kind of explain how things played out the way they did.
And we were all watching this, myself, you and Callum, we were all watching this in different cities, but we were messaging each other back and forth online. And we kept being struck by the same moments. Like, I remember messaging you going, wow, that was so powerful. And you were you were writing the same thing to me at the same time. As you say, I think you're completely right. That is what stands out to any members of the public. Those were the moments that were repeated on television and quotes in the newspapers. Yeah, I think we were all sort of struck by the same moments of emotion on Wednesday. Now, it wasn't just Nicola Sturgeon in the spotlight this week. I think the role of the members of the inquiry were on the panel were also really interesting. I thought Jackie Bailey for Labour was very forensic. She seemed to get under the First Minister's skin the most, Adele, but the First Minister didn't crack on that particularly. I don't know. I think there was a level of mutual respect there between Jackie Bailey and the First Minister, both very strong in their performances. What did you make of Jackie Bailey?
As you say, if you follow this if you were also on Twitter at the same time as this playing out, any time that Jackie Bailey appears, you get from political commentators, "Oh right, yeah, right, here we go. We're getting into the sort of the nitty gritty here." Jackie Bailey is very forensic, and as you say, I think she is. Of the entire committee, she is the one that really does get the closest to getting under the First Minister's skin, I guess, because she doesn't get maybe as emotional as other members of the committee. She always stays quite, Jackie Bailey, she always stays quite, it's all very measured and forensic and level-headed. So in that sense, I think that maybe at times irritated the First Minister. There's obviously Margaret Mitchell, gave a kind of long, kind of some would say rambling kind of speech, I guess you would call it, at the very end, where she was kind of brought in by the convener, Linda Fabiani, said, there wasn't really a question in what she was saying. She was just kind of giving her views. And I guess some interpret that as not being that's not as strong as a sort of forensic questioning line to just kind of go off on one at the end like that. And I think a lot's also been said about some of the SNP members on the committee who are obviously in a difficult situation. They're questioning their boss, really. But some people saying, they could have done with being a lot more forensic and that they were pretty soft on her. But that's really to be expected. But I think that's going to make it interesting when they do come up with their eventual report. It's hard to imagine that it's going to be conclusive in either direction at the moment. Looking at the way that each kind of committee member behaves, you can see who you think will be on one side. You can see who you think will be on the, and then maybe a couple of people in the middle. It's just, where is it going to end up in the end?
I would, for the record, I would definitely watch a Margaret Mitchell and Linda Fabiani TV show where they're on some kind of road trip, just bickering the entire time. That would be like must see TV. Well, then looking ahead at what happens next, Callum, you've been taking a look at that because all we've heard all the evidence now and all the testimony, that's not the end of it.
And no, absolutely not. And, I would just emphasize, Nicola Sturgeon, we've obviously spoken about these lines that she had that maybe cut through to the public, but it's not necessarily the public that are going to be the judges on this. She's not off the hook by any stretch of the imagination, far from it. She still could be found to have breached the ministerial code maybe more than once, and that could be a resignation issue, I suppose.
Are all breaches of the ministerial code on the same level, or some more serious than
others? No, they're not. And I think it was interesting that even Alex Salmond made that distinction and didn't necessarily say she would have to resign. I think it will depend on which what the breaches are and how many, I suppose. And there's also, you know, it's hard to make any predictions with this thing the way it's been, but there has been a sense in some ways that you know, if she survives, she might even emerge from the whole thing in a stronger position. The SNP have been saying they've put on thousands of members since she gave her evidence. I think 7,000 or 8,000 was the last count. You know, and I think some people will have had some sympathy with her. They obviously see her every day at the daily coronavirus briefing and see that she's having to deal with that, and then at the same time having to deal with these allegations about her own conduct. I think some people will have some sympathy with her. Obviously, others won't.
I tell you who didn't have some sympathy was the Scottish Conservatives.
No, they didn't.
They had no sympathy for her. They've got a vote of no confidence, a motion of no confidence in her. She looks much more certain to pass that now than, you know, if it happened a few days ago. But did they overplay their hand here, the Conservatives?
It's hard to say. I mean, we'll see what emerges. But I mean, they did kind of, there was a bit of a frenzy in the build up to the First Minister's evidence on Wednesday. We had the motion of no confidence in John Swinney, which is still there. I think that's not been withdrawn yet. And then another motion of no confidence in the First Minister. I have my doubts that there'll be enough votes to pass that before the two inquiries have even concluded. I think I'd imagine the Greens will at least want to see what comes of these two inquiries before they make any decisions. I also kind of wonder if you know, you can't, I think we spoke about this earlier, you know, you can't move motions of no confidence every week. You know, they had to choose their moment to do it, and whether it was the right moment, I'm not sure. I also wonder if it's a sign that they're not overly confident that these inquiries are going to, you know, cause the end of Nicola Sturgeon's career if they're moving it now. In terms of what happens next with inquiry, they're supposed to put the committee inquiry is supposed to produce a report before the dissolution of Parliament, which I think is March 25th. So not very long, 20 days, less than 3 weeks. My understanding is it will be a committee report with recommendations and conclusions. Adele's right, you can't see them being unanimous on everything, but they don't have to be. They can vote on specific recommendations, so there could be a recommendation with a number of dissenting voices. I mean, I think that's interesting. I mean, there are aspects of this that they might be unanimous on. I mean, I think they're united in terms of being pretty scathing about the way the government's failed to produce the documents they've asked for time and time again. And that cuts to the heart of a wider issue in terms of the Parliament's ability to hold the government to account. I think I would guess there might be a recommendation relating to that, and certainly some criticism. Also, you'd imagine there might be something in terms of tightening up the procedures for dealing with harassment complaints, given that was what was at the root of a lot of these issues. In terms of whether they'll be unanimous on whether Nicola Sturgeon broke the ministerial code, I have my doubts. But there's another inquiry looking at that, an independent one being led by James Hamilton, QC. My understanding is I don't think there's a time bar on that, so we wait and see what happens there, and we'll, you know, also wait and see what happens with these votes of no confidence as well.
Well, then just briefly, in the time we've got left, as a member of the viewing public, I'm going to want some human sacrifices at the end of this. Somebody has to lose their job here, right? If it's not Nicola Sturgeon, somebody has to go. I mean, maybe don't name names, but is this ministerial level? Maybe I can get a take from Adele and Callum. Is it somebody ministerial that has to go? Is it civil service that has to go? Is it special advisors?
I think the Scottish Government's permanent secretary, Leslie Evans, is on a bit of a shugly peg. at the end of the day, she was responsible ultimately for the civil service at this time, and that, you know, the failure over the initial investigation and the complaints was down to that. And then she obviously would have had a role in terms of overseeing the judicial review as well. So, I mean, I think her term runs out anyway reasonably soon, but I'd imagine that wouldn't be renewed. Alex Salmond's obviously called for her to resign, and he's also said the Lord Advocate should consider his position. It was interesting, actually, at one point in Nicola Sturgeon's evidence, when she was asked why no one had resigned, she sort of said, well, there's still investigations ongoing, including the committee's one. So, I mean, that sort of gave the impression that you know, heads could still roll over all this. And yeah, you're right, they possibly will.
Adele, what's your take?
I was just about to say, I would say Leslie Evans as well, because...
Hi, Leslie.
She's been cited by Salmond. She's got a high-up civil service position, but at the same time, you know, before this happened, nobody, you know, the public really knew who she was. So in that sense, getting rid of her probably wouldn't be... create too much of an impact, at least outwardly. So I think she's probably the most at risk, I would guess.
Yeah, Peter Murrell as well possibly might decide that his time as SNP chief executive might be up as well, I would think.
Well, I think those both sound like safe bets. That's all from the Stooshie this week. Thanks to Adele Merson, Callum Ross, and producer Chris Finn. Don't forget to listen, download, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and join us again next week to be better briefed. Bye for now.
The Stooshie is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you are better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph, and The Evening Express work hard every day, online and in print, to bring you careful reporting and analysis to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, Westminster, and beyond. Subscribe to The Stooshie today, recommend us to friends and family, rate and review it if you have a moment, and let us know what you think of what we cover and how we cover it on Twitter and Facebook. We're Stooshie Scott on both. Be better briefed with The Stooshie from DC Thompson Media.